Serenity Deity, August, December 9th, Bhagavad Gita.
Everything is lost and one again falls down into the material pool. On the other hand, the man of controlled senses, who's free from attachment and aversion, he doesn't particularly love anything in the world, he doesn't particularly hate anything. He attains calmness or evenness of mind, even while by experiencing various objects through the senses. He may see something very beautiful, he may see a horrible thing. That's what it means. He's not trying to enjoy it. He's experiencing what he sees. But still, he's not disturbed. His mind is fixed. When one who is so fixed achieves tranquility, all miseries vanish. So all miseries are due to pursuing material desires, meditating on the objects of the senses, which cause attachment, which causes lust, which causes anger, which causes delusion, which causes loss of memory, which causes loss of intelligence, which causes falling down into the material world, becoming disconnected with any sense of bhakti. When one's intelligence is clear, then one can reach the goal very quickly. On the other hand, when his mind is in control, who is bereft of intelligence related to Atma, anything that's not related to Atma is not intelligence. He's unable to attain peace. And without peace, where's the question of happiness? Can anybody be happy without peace? He's not peaceful. His mind is disturbed and agitated. Just as a wind sweeps away a boat on the water, so one whose senses are diverted by even one of the senses being attracted by material sense objects, his mind carries away his intelligence. Therefore, the conclusion Krishna's giving of that is that one whose senses are completely restrained from the sense objects, he's considered a person of intelligence. Gross, no judging. Well, that person's intelligent, that person's an idiot, that person's in between. But that's really the test, or the test of intelligence. Now there's a very important verse coming up, 268, isn't it? Oh, that was 258. That was one of the three verses Gurudev said we have to keep in our heart. Which is Vasanti here? Is she here behind the weaver? No, Vasanti. One who is not disturbed, inspired with threefold miseries, and who is not elated when there is happiness, who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, he's understood to be a person of steady intelligence, steady mind. The enlightened state appears like darkness to ordinary people, while the waking condition of the bewildered sense enjoyers is night to the self-realized muni. As Prabhupada said in the beginning of the movement in New York, and then it became a book, it became one of the first books that we distributed, called Who is Crazy? And Prabhupada said that they think we're crazy, chanting Hare Krishna, wearing devotee clothes, and we think that they are in the darkest region of craziness. Just as countless rivers flow into the ocean, which never floods, no matter how much rivers flow into the ocean, it never floods. So similarly, various desires flow into the mind of one who is intelligence is fixed, but he's always equal, he's never never touched by those desires. Only such a person can attain peace, not a person who strives to satisfy his desires. Because it's just like lust is just like a fire. The more fuel you put onto it, trying to satisfy it, the more it rages. And that's the end of chapter 2. Now we're coming to chapter 3, which is called Karma Yoga. Arjuna said, if you consider intelligence related to bhakti, which is beyond the modes, if you consider that as superior to action, then why are you asking me to engage in this ghastly warfare? Again, Janardan, the giver of liberation. Doesn't seem like you're interested in liberating me. My intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions, ambiguous statements. Please, therefore, tell me decisively which path is most beneficial for me, the path of renunciation or the path of action. And Krishna is going to reconcile it. O sinless Arjuna, I've already explained clearly that there's two types of firm faith in the world. I wish it was in English. I don't even know what it means. You have the book there, Vasanti? Number 3. Now?
I already explained that there are two classes of men who realize themselves. Some are inclined to understanding
of empirical philosophical speculation.
We are finding it more difficult to hear this time because there is some kind of echo.
Alright, I'm putting it down. Tell me how it is now.
You mean the thing is
I should put this down? Alright, now tell me how it is. How is it now? Same?
Yesterday,
how is this?
Better.
How does this sound? Sounds good? All right. Keep interrupting if it doesn't sound good. So one is the path of empirical philosophical speculation, and the other is the path of devotional service, bhakti. Or as it says here, Niskam Karma Yoga. Without performing karma, as prescribed in the Shastra, can I have the other book? Sorry, I'm having a hard time. Not that advanced. Not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction. Nor by mere renunciation alone can one achieve perfection. Okay, I'm going to stop working. I'm going to be renounced. I'm not doing anything. I don't receive freedom from reaction because Arjuna was going to not fight. But Krishna said you're going to get so many reactions. The people are going to laugh at you. They're going to think you're a coward. You're not going to have a good time with them. You're not going to go to heaven. And you'll just be absorbed in the bodily conception of life. And they're all going to die and go to hell anyway. Because they're sinful. But if you kill them, at least they'll go to heaven. Because they'll have died with me right there. Me standing right there. On the other hand, one who does control his senses by his mind and engages his active organs in works of devotion without attachment, he is superior. So not by mere renunciation, not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction, nor by mere renunciation alone can one achieve perfection. Rather, one who controls his senses by his mind engages his active organs in works of devotion Without attachment, he's by far superior. Like Prabhupada said, if you offer a Mayavadi some money, he'll go, oh, my renounces. You offer a devotee, he's ready because he's going to give it to Krishna. Yes?
What does it mean to perform actions and devotion without attachment?
Action and devotion without attachment means I'm just attached to the person that I'm serving. I don't want to enjoy the fruits of my work. That is, the devotees went out on Harinam today. And they distributed some books. And one man might have been me. I don't think so in Vrindavan. But if it happened, say in the West, then you just think, that guy was such a creep. And, you know, he just threw the book on the floor. But meanwhile, I lost my Krishna consciousness. I'm thinking that I'm being very devotional by being attached to the fact that he was against Krishna. But I'm just losing everything. That's the quick example that I can think of. Or let's say I'm doing a painting and I'm having a hard time making it come out right. So I'm just absorbed in how it's not coming out right. Now, I'm supposed to work hard to make sure that to try that it comes out right, but I shouldn't be angry if it doesn't come out right. I should still think of Krishna. Ah, that Krishna. He always gives me such a hard time. I'm trying to serve him. He has no appreciation. I mean, we think like that kind of indirectly. Does that make it clearer? Does anybody else have an example? Is that clear? Performing, just like Krishna told Arjuna yesterday, you have a right to perform your prescribed duty. In fact, it's your duty to perform your duty. But you have no right to be attached to the result. You have no right to think that you're the cause of the result or the cause of the action. And you have no right to not do your duty. If it's actually a God-given duty. That is, or a guru-given duty. A man cannot even maintain his physical body without work. You have to work. But if you don't work for Krishna, then that work binds you to the material world. Every step you take, you're killing bacteria and ants, or some kind of microscopic insects on the floor. So you have to walk. Nobody's going to not walk, even if you walk to the bathroom. So you have so many sinful reactions just by walking to the bathroom if it's not for Krishna. And everybody has to act. So therefore, Krishna says, work done as a satisfaction for Vishnu must be performed. Otherwise, this work binds one to the material world. O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duty for his satisfaction, and in this way be free from bondage. No other way. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods, and blessed them all by saying, be thou happy by this performance of sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you all desirable things. The demigods, being pleased by sacrifice, will please you, and thus, nourishing one another, will reign general prosperity for all. So, by worshipping Vishnu, then automatically the demigods are pleased. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of Yajna, supply all necessities to man. And all the demigods are servants of Krishna. So by performing Sankirtan Yajna, then everything is prosperous. If one does not, if one tries to enjoy the gifts without first offering them to me, then one's actually a thief. It's like if you don't pay your electric bill, then they'll come and they'll try to incriminate you and fine you, things like that. So one who does not satisfy the demigods, and no one can satisfy the demigods without satisfying Krishna, he's certainly a thief. Because there are 33 billion demigods, and even if you please five, and you haven't pleased all of them, there can be havoc. So you please all of them by pleasing Krishna. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sin by first offering their food in sacrifice. Others who prepare food for sense gratification, what happens? You think you can get away with it? No. He's verily eating only sin. You can't avoid the sinful reactions if you're eating sin. Even for a devotee, who we pretend we're offering it to Krishna, but it's really offering, it's really for ourselves, we also have to get some reactions, some obstacles in our bhakti, some suffering. Though it's not the suffering of the karmi, we have to get some suffering, some reactions, some obstacles. All living bodies subsist on food grains. Food grains come from rains. Rains come from sacrifice, and sacrifice is born of man's work. So you have to work. Regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is present in all acts of sacrifice. One who doesn't follow this, he doesn't follow the prescribed Vedic system of sacrifice, certainly he leads a life of sin. For a person delighting only in the senses lives in what? Vain. No purpose of his living. His living, his breathing, is just like the breathing of the bellows in the blacksmith shop. There's no life. But, this one here, a really poetic verse by Krishna. Is that it? No. It looks different. Well, all of Krishna's verses are poetic. Yastvat maratire vasyad. Atma chittas cha manava, atma neva cha santus tus, tasya karjam na vichyate. Where's the one about Rama? Raramas. What? Oh, that's in the fifth chapter, which is very similar to this verse in the third chapter. So it just talks about a person who's living in vain. However, one who takes pleasure in the self, who's illumined in the self, who rejoices in and is satisfied with the self alone, fully satisfied, for him there's no duty. For a conditioned soul, he has to do a duty, otherwise he's in sin. But for the pure devotee, he has no duty to perform, because he's already situated in his atma, and within, he's already serving Radha and Krishna. He doesn't need to do anything externally. Still he does it. Why? To set the example for others. He doesn't need to depend on anybody else. He just depends on Krishna as his proprietor, as his maintainer. He has no purpose to fulfill any prescribed duty. And he doesn't have any reason not to work either, because he wants to set an example for others. He's just fully satisfied. So therefore, working on behalf of the Lord as a sacrifice to Vishnu or the Supreme Vishnu Krishna, without attachment, that is, let's say there's a person in a bank and so much money is coming in and out, millions of dollars in a day. But he's not attached to, oh my God, $1 million just went out. Wow, $1 million just came in. He's just doing his duty. It's the bank's pleasure, or not pleasure, if there's any problem. Even kings like Janaka, the father of Sita, attain the perfectional stage by performance of prescribed duties. Not that he had to do them, but just as an example to us. Therefore, for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. So on every level, Arjuna was defeated by Krishna. That's about five levels. One of spirit soul, the one of doing your duty, means you're not sinful, but if you don't do your duty, you are. Enjoyment, you won't enjoy with your relatives. Going to heaven, you will go to heaven if you kill them, you won't if you don't. And this one, you should perform your prescribed duty to educate others and set a good example. And did you leave out any? While speaking one learned words, you're mourning from what's not worthy of grief. You think you're so intelligent. But what is intelligence? Intelligence is one who controls his senses and fixes his mind on me. Otherwise, one is intelligence is irresolute, many branch, and he's not really intelligent if he goes after his, follows his mind to follow the senses. These are all of Krishna's arguments. Because after all, whatever action is performed by a great man, common men will follow in his footsteps. And whatever example he sets, all the world pursues. Like, look, just look at me. There's no work prescribed for me in all the three worlds. Nor do I want anything out of, you know, as a result of doing anything. I don't have to obtain anything, but still I'm working. Why? To set the example. As an ignorant person performs his ignorant duties to get some result, similarly, a learned person also acts, but without attachment, just for the sake of leading people on the right path. And don't disrupt the minds of those who are attached to fruit of action. Don't just tell them not to do something. Should I tell them my sad story? We were in one of the countries about maybe 7 or so years ago. And they were selling shirts with Gurudev's picture on it. So I told somebody this wasn't a good idea because, you know, Gurudev's face gets all scrunched up when you wash it or throw it in the corner of your room or fold it. Even if you fold it nicely, you're folding his face. So what I said got back to Gurudev, and he called for me and he chastised me and he quoted this verse. Don't disturb the mind of the ignorant. He said, these people are doing it to make money for me, to make money so that they can have me in their festival, so they can pay my plane fare. If you take this away from them, don't expect that they're going to jump up to the next step. They're going to fall down to the previous step. So better, he said, they should not be encouraged to refrain from work, but to engage in work in spirit of devotion. So, and then Gurudev said, I never see what anybody wears anyway. I just see how much bhakti somebody has and then I fill in the rest. Which 326. The bewildered soul, this is a very important verse, under the influence of the three modes of nature, thinks himself the performer of activities which are actually carried out by nature. And nature is controlled by Krishna. So we should never think that we're the cause of the action. Or that we're the doer. It's hard, isn't it? Like everything I do, I think I did. Everything I think I do, I think I did. But no, the bewildered soul under the influence of the three modes of nature thinks himself the performer of activities which are actually carried out by nature and ultimately carried out by Krishna. One who is in knowledge of the absolute truth does not engage himself in the senses or in sense gratification. Knowing well the difference between work and devotion and work for fruit of action. Bewildered by the modes of nature, the ignorant fully engage in sense gratification activities and they become attached. But the wise should not unsettle them, although the duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. Just dovetail him. Oh, what do you do? You're this? Okay, let's do it for Krishna. Maybe I could help you out. Let's go on the Seva team's website and see if there's any team that needs your talent. Therefore, the conclusion is, O Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me, with mind intent in me, and without desire for gain, personal gain, I want Krishna to gain, without desire for gain, and free from lethargy, laziness, fight, because I'm ordering it. How would Arjuna desire to gain? He thought that he would gain by not fighting. Because then he'd gain the enjoyment, satisfaction of associating with all of his relatives. Yes. Yes. What? Once again? Well, suppose my eyes are seeing something. I could think that's me, and this is reality. I am this mind and senses, and these sense objects are real. So when I start looking at something, I feel that my duty is to really get into it and try and enjoy that. Rather, when I realize that my senses have contacted some sense object, then I should be aloof and just withdraw the whole thing. I don't just keep having it connected. Does that make sense? Sorry? The I, E-Y-E, or the I? Thinking what things? You mean if I intellectualize that this is just my senses connecting with their objects, just that thought is my false ego, you're saying? We'll be on the false ego until late Ruchi, Asakti, and especially going into Bhav. But at least we're using our material mind to follow the instructions of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and that purifies them. Atak Sri Krishna Namari Abhavedraya Mandriyai Sevan Makehi Jivadu Svayami Vistaratita. Santi? Huh? Yes. No one can understand the name, fame, form, past tense of the Lord by material senses, because they're beyond material. You're asking who is Rukmini?
Yes.
Rukmini is an expansion of Radharani. And just as Krishna His original form is Sujanyanandan Shyam Sundar. That's his complete form. But like a plenary manifestation of Krishna manifests in Dwarka. And in order to serve him as his consort, a plenary manifestation of Radha manifests as Rukmini, to serve Krishna as his Dwarkadish Krishna as his pleasure potency. What? Yeah, don't know. Ek step Krishna Vrindavan ke bihar nahi jaate hai. Kabhi bhi nahi. Only expansions manifest. It is Krishna, an expansion of Krishna, not the complete Krishna who's in Vrindavan. A big piece of Krishna, just like the moon. In the moon is the full moon, and then there's the quarter moon and the half moon. So it's all the moon, it's nothing but the moon, but it's not the full manifestation of the moon. Or you have, say these electric lights, they have a certain wattage, and then you have smaller lights that have smaller wattage. It's nothing but the electricity, but it's not manifesting the full electricity. Okay. So one who serves me without envy, follows the Vedic injunctions faithfully, without envy, he becomes free from bondage. As soon as we feel envious, we know there goes bondage. There goes birth and death for how many births. There goes attachment to the senses. There goes uncontrolled senses. But those who are out of envy disregard these teachings because they want to be me Krishna. Disregard these teachings and do not practice them regularly. They are considered bereft of all knowledge. So who is in knowledge and who's intelligent and who's not? One who out of envy disregards these teachings and does not follow them regularly, he's considered to be bereft of all knowledge, befooled and doomed to ignorance and bondage. If we meditate on each of those words, ignorance, bondage, befooled, doomed, better not be envious of Krishna. Saves a lot of trouble. And, of course, we're going to be envious because we're conditioned souls, at least I'm speaking for myself. So knowing that, I engage in the process for getting out of it. That is praying, chanting, taking prasadam, while taking prasadam, praying and chanting, while doing anything, praying and chanting, with the fixed aim in mind of bhava bhakti and being free from all that kind of dirty thoughts, you could say. Now Arjuna is asking, now gee whiz Krishna, what makes somebody do sin anyway? By what is one impelled to sinful actions as if unwillingly, by force? People don't want to be sinful, but it's like some other power is forcing them. What is that? And the Blessed Lord said, it is lust alone, Arjuna, which is the all-devouring, sinful enemy of the world, which is born out of the mode of passion and later on transformed into ignorance. So this lust is the all-devouring, sinful enemy of the world. It's born out of contact with the mode of passion, and because anger is the younger brother of lust, which is born of passion, it's transformed. Lust is always transformed into wrath or anger. And that same lust is the all-devouring, sinful enemy of the world. And that's what makes us transmigrate to become worms and amoebas and aardvarks and all those lovely things, snails. As fire is covered by smoke, as a mirror is covered by dust, or as the embryo is covered by the womb, these are different degrees of covering. Fire covered by smoke is not really totally covered. A mirror covered by dust is a little more covered, and the embryo covered by the womb is totally covered to our vision. Similarly, the living entity is covered by different degrees of lust. Like if you're a demigod, you're covered by less. If you're a human being, you're covered by more. If you're an animal, you're covered by more. If you're a plant, it means you're covered by more. Thus, a man's pure consciousness, we're reading from Bhagavad Gita because today is the day that Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. It's the anniversary of Sri Krishna, Sri Bhagavad Gita Jayanti. Thus, a man's pure consciousness is covered by his eternal, I'm always looking for who's my friend and who's my enemy. So his eternal enemy is lust. Thus, a man's pure consciousness is covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. But fire is raging. Okay, calm down. I'll give you some food here. Here's some old boxes. But what happens? The fire becomes more raging. Doesn't say thanks. I'm fine. Becomes more raging. So the more we try to satisfy our lust, the less, and our senses, the less they become satisfied. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are all three sitting places of this lust, which veils the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. So the senses, the mind, and the intelligence are all sitting places of this lust. And what does that lust do? It veils the knowledge, the real knowledge of the living entity, and bewilders him. That's why we're so bewildered. Therefore, Arjuna, from the very beginning, we should curb this great sinful enemy known as lust. How? By regulating the senses. Only take Krishna prasadam and don't overdo it. Regulating the senses. What's another example of regulating the senses? If you like to see movies, go to Pure Bhakti TV. What's another way of regulating the senses? And slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. What's another way of regulating the senses? Only, what is that? King Amrish? What? Huh? You know the Sanskrit? He used his feet to walk to the temple. He used his nose to smell the incense offered to the deities. He used his hands to touch devotees. He used his legs to do service and walk to the temple. He used his hands to sweep the temple and do other services. He used his lips to speak the glories of the Lord. Now the working senses are superior to dull matter. The sense of touch, the sense of taste, it's all superior to dull matter. Then mind is superior to the senses. The intelligence is superior to the mind. And he, the soul, is superior to the intelligence. Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to all material objects, mind, and intelligence, one should control the lower self by the higher self by means of spiritual strength. What is spiritual strength? Taking shelter of those who have spiritual strength. And thus conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. Thus ends chapter 3. Chapter 4. Now Krishna is telling Arjuna, the same thing that I'm telling you now, I told the sun god trillions and billions of years ago. This imperishable science of yoga I told to the sun god, and he told it to his son, Manu. Manu is the father of mankind. There are 13 Manus in a day of Brahma. And every Manu lives for 71 and a half millenniums, lots of millions of years. And Manu, who's the father of mankind, instructed it to Ikshaku, the same Bhagavad Gita. Ikshaku is the first king of this planet. Then this supreme science came down in the chain of the disciplic succession, and saintly kings, all saintly kings, understood it in this way, because it's the duty of the saintly king to make his whole kingdom Krishna conscious. He has to follow Brahmins and he has to engage everybody, the Vaishyas, the Sudras, everybody, and all ashrams, the brahmacharis, sannyasis, they're all meant to be inspired and regulated by the saintly king. There was one king named Chitranga, who the day before Ekadasi would go out to the whole kingdom and announce, make a big loudspeaker announcement. Not by loudspeaker, but somehow. But now, in the course of time, the science as it is appears to be lost. So in order to close up the gap, link the chain, today I'm telling that science to you, Arjuna. What's your qualification? The qualification is that you're my devotee and you're my friend. Arjuna said, wait a minute. The sun god is senior by birth to you. How am I to understand that is millions of years ago? How am I to understand that you spoke this millions of years ago, me and you were the same age? So Krishna replied, many births both you and I have had. I appeared so many times in so many different incarnations. And you too, but you forgot it. But I remember it. Although I'm unborn, and although my transcendental body never deteriorates, still I appear again and again, millennium after millennium, in that transcendental form, which some people may take as material. I'm unborn, I never take birth, and my, what is it, never deteriorates? I'm unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates. Still I appear, millennium after millennium, in different forms. When do I appear? Whenever and wherever there's a decline in religious principles and a predominant rise in irreligion, at that time I come. Why do I come? I come to deliver the pious and destroy the miscreants. For that reason, I advent myself millennium after millennium. How? By my internal potency. In other words, I can't do a thing without Radharani. What's that verse? Anga shamali samadhir abhito mandi kritendi varam jajam jaguduro chitam bhagaritam patam vadasya shriya Vrindaranyanivasinam divasattamabhiramodaram Radhaskandaniveshitojolabhujam Jayendamodaram Jayendamodaram. The verse by Rupa Goswami is describing the beautiful bodily features of Krishna. He defeats the color of a rain cloud, his garments defeat the brilliance of the lightning, he wears a beautiful garland on his chest, and he rests his arm on the shoulder of Radharani. What does that mean? If he doesn't rest his shoulder on her arm, he'll fall down. He's totally dependent on her. I mean, that's hidden. It's not stated there in the verse. You have to have a rasic touch when you move together. So, now I've told you about my transcendental nature. One who understands, who knows the transcendental nature of my birth and activities, he himself will never take birth again in this material world. Why? Because he attains my eternal abode. So I'm telling you that even though I have no material body, my transcendental body never deteriorates, I'm never born, still I appear in different forms millennium after millennium. And one who knows the transcendental nature of my birth and activities, not theoretically, because if somebody knows the transcendental nature of my birth and activities theoretically, then his liberation is also theoretical. He attains my abode theoretically, and he's free from birth and death theoretically. But if one knows it in truth, that is by realization, then he himself never takes birth. Can you imagine, you know that we're all going to take birth and be in a womb and have to be bitten by the germs in the womb and come out upside down, like covered by blood, and the doctor's hanging us upside down and slapping us around, and then that's just the beginning. And then what to speak of the experience of death? You know how scary that is? I can't even, you know, imagine like what, how many I have to go through. Because I'm not so serious. Being free from attachment, fear, and anger. Being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me. Suppose I become angry, then I think, okay, I gotta be free from anger, I have to be free from fear, I have to be free from attachment. Why? Because Krishna said that if I do that, then what will happen? If I take refuge in him and not succumb to my anger, what's going to happen? Many, many persons in the past have become purified by knowledge of me, and thus they've attained transcendental love for me. So in the beginning it has to be forced, but then it becomes natural. When does it become natural and not forced? When I get mercy, and the mercy descends from the Ragatmika Bhakti into the heart of the disciple. That's late Ruchi going into Asakti and especially Bhav. Now he's going to talk about Varnashram. Are there any questions or comments? We'll continue tomorrow at 5 o'clock in hopes of finishing. Any questions or comments? It's 5 minutes to Sandhya Aarti. Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai, Shri Sachinanda Gohari ki jai, Shri Raj Govardhan ki jai. If there are no questions, I'll continue. Yes. This is described by Kapila Dev in the third canto when he's speaking to his mother. The mind's business is to accept and reject, and it's made of a certain substance. And the intelligence discriminates between right and wrong, what to do and what not to do. It's superior and it's more subtle. And the intelligence must control the mind, not the mind controlling the intelligence, because the mind just accepts and rejects on the basis of sankalpa vikalpa, it just does it. So therefore it needs to be controlled by the intelligence so that it can accept and reject with intelligence.
What is the ego then?
Huh?
Where is the ego? So we have intelligence, we have the mind, the other senses, where can we place it?
And contaminate, there are four subtle elements as described by Kapila Dev. Mind, intelligence, false ego, and contaminated consciousness. The false ego is actually the source of all the other subtle and gross elements. The false ego is called ahankar, and it's the bridge between matter and spirit. The false ego is made of false ego. So all the subsequent elements which are made of false ego, coming from the false ego, mind, intelligence, false ego, sound, ether, air, form, sight, fire, water, they're all false. They're not reality. Bhagavatam, either second canto or first chapter, either the second canto or the first canto, second chapter, I forget which, says that this is the world of false names and false forms. Ultimately, it's all atoms. A tree is not a real tree. The real trees are in Goloka Vrindavan. This is just the modes of nature due to somebody's, some soul's karma. So now he's going to, is that all right? You can read about it elaborately. Is it sort of kind of answered or not?
Not very clear.
Okay, what's the, you restate the question?
I'd like to understand where to place ego.
You mean geographically?
Like, I mean, I can understand what is mind, what is intelligence, how the senses work, but still for ego.
It's the identification. That I am this mind, I am this intelligence. It's very subtle. It's not something that you can see or pick up. It's an identification. Just like you can't see the mind, but you can kind of feel it operating. So the false ego is more subtle, and that's what makes us identify with the mind and with the intelligence and with the sense objects. It's the junction between matter and spirit that makes us connect with matter. But where it is geographically, I can't say. I don't know if that helps. Why don't you read, if you don't mind, Kapila Dev's teaching on it, and then you could report to us with an elaborate explanation. Is that all right? Tomorrow? Is it something you'd like to do? Yeah, speaking to you.
I'm pretty bad actually reading.
Well, if anybody would like to, I know Vasanti's a scholar. If anybody would like to read about false ego and Kapila Dev's teachings and give us a little report tomorrow, that would be great. Okay? Good. Yes.
Last,
here.
Louder? The word last, usually, at least the way it is translated into Spanish, it means sexual desire. Okay? But Krishna's not referring only to that, he's referring to any kind of service pleasure. Now, I find that very confusing.
Okay, lust is what you call a homonym. A homonym. You see my bare arms?
No.
Egad, a bear just walked into the temple. I can't bear it. It's the same sound, but it has all the different meanings. So lust has many meanings.
Depending. In English also,
there's lust for, like Prabhupada said in his own words, lust for intoxication, lust for sex, lust for, talking, actually eating, lust for eating. Yeah, this achihara prayasas cha. This achihara means uncontrolled eating, but eating is of different kinds. So lust is of different kinds, it's not only sexual, but it also means that, so it's a homonym. You're the light of my life, Vrindavanesri. Can't you get more light into the temple? I feel so light today. Okay, now he's going to... Oh, it's time. Is it time? Okay.
It's just in Spanish, it's very confusing because you only have one word for lust, which is lujuria, and it only refers to sexual pleasure. So,
well, maybe you can use a different word.
We have to use only sense enjoyments or something.
Sure.
Like that,
yeah.
It's very confusing.
Greed for... Well, maybe you can not use a different word. Yeah. Okay. Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Giri Raj Govardhan ki jai, Sri Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sri Bhagavad Gita Jayanti ki jai, Sri Sandhya Arati ki jai, Go Premanandi. So tomorrow 5. Santi, she here? Harikata? Hare Krishna, what's your name?
My name is Shyam Indrajit.
Shyam?
Shyam Indrajit.
Shyam Indrajit. Very nice to meet you.
My father's name is Giriraj Kishore Dikshit.
Oh, beautiful.
And my grandfather's name is...
Very nice.